We've heard a lot about inequality between people, between groups, between generations, or even between countries, but firms are also becoming more unequal. Why is this happening, and do we need to worry about it? Welcome to Vox Talks, a series of interviews with the world's leading economists. My name is Tim Phillips. My guest today is John Van Reenen of MIT. At this year's Jackson Hole Conference, John presented a new paper called Increasing Differences Between Firms, Market Power and the Macroeconomy, in which he presents the evidence that sales are getting more concentrated and that productivity and wage differences between the winners and losers is increasing. Now, if you're on the board of Google or Walmart, you're punching the air, but if you're working for their competitors, not so much. What are the consequences for the macroeconomy and for competition policy? John Van Reenen, welcome to Vox Talks.
Hello.
Now, your paper presents evidence of the increasing importance of what we're learning to call superstar firms. Who are they and what do they do?
Superstar firms in one are just the kind of really big, really successful firms. So I guess in the most canonical example of this is the high-tech firms. So the Googles, the Apples, the Microsofts, firms which are very large, very high market value. But there's also relatively low-tech firms who are also superstar firms. So if we think about retail and wholesale in America, and Walmart would be another good example of a firm which is now, by revenues and employment, one of the three biggest in the world. Actually, it turns out if you look across wide swathes of the economy in the US and many other countries, industries across the board are becoming increasingly dominated by a small number of larger and larger firms.
So this is just not an attribute of the American high-tech business. This is a global phenomenon.
Yeah, it's not just high-tech, although high-tech is a classic example of that you see in many other industries in America. And in fact, it looks like you're seeing this in many other countries around the world, in the kind of developed nations. You know, also Britain, and Britain on the high street. In terms of retailers, you have the big four dominating. In banks, it's a similar type of story. If you look at this systematically, concentration ratios, which are things like the share of the total sales in the industry going to the top four firms, for example, seem to be going up broadly in Europe as well as in the United States.
Apart from their results and their size, are there ways in which we can measure that they are better than other firms in the way they behave, for example?
Well, in terms of this kind of idea of increasing differences, you see that in size, it's one measure in terms of the sales or the market value of employment. But also you see this in two other really interesting dimensions. One is in terms of the productivity. So productivity is something economists use as a measure of firm success, the output you can get per worker, for example. And that seems to becoming increasingly different between firms. So these large firms tend to be more productive than the smaller firms, and those gaps in productivity seem to be getting bigger. The second dimension is in terms of wages. So if you actually look at the wages that different firms pay, then, as we know, some firms are relatively high-paying firms, McKinsey's and Goldman Sachs, and some are relatively low-paying firms, like the McDonald's or the Kentucky Fried Chickens of the world. And in fact, if you look at people's wages, then the main thing associated with the difference of people's wages is the firm they work for. So the increasing inequality between individuals in terms of their wages is basically because people are increasingly working for different firms, some of which are high-paying and some of which are low-paying. You look within firms, the differences, apart from the very top, where the CEOs have done very well, for the other 99% of people within firms, differences between people within firms hasn't changed that much over the last 30 years, at least in America. So most of what's happening seems to be firms becoming increasingly different in terms of their wages. So across all those dimensions, size, productivity, and wages, you see these increasing differences between firms.
Do we think superstar firms are better managed? I know you've done a lot of work on management quality.
Yeah, I think that on average, in these large successful firms, they tend to have better management practices in terms of keeping better track of what's going on in their firms in terms of data, better target setting, better ways of doing hiring, promotion, firing, being much more systematic and organized.
Is this increased concentration a problem for the macro economy beyond being a problem for their competitors?
That's a great question, and I don't think that we've come to a clear conclusion of this. In fact, I mean, this phenomenon is just starting to be understood in terms of a descriptive way. I think that the worries that one might have about this is if the economy is becoming increasingly dominated by a small number of firms in different industries, then those firms can start using the power that they have for things which could be damaging to consumers. So by putting up prices, by reducing the degree of competition, reducing quality, and maybe even in the political dimension to use their power to influence the rules of the game, to try and change the way that they're being regulated by using lobbying and lawyers to help give them an even stronger entrenched position. So some people are of the view that the reason that we've seen the emergence of superstar firms is because the government competition authorities, the antitrust authorities, have taken their eye off the ball, that they've allowed too many mergers to take place which have been anti-competitive, that they haven't enforced competition. And so the reason that you see this emergence of superstar firms is due to the weakness of enforcement of competition policy. My view is that that's actually not the main thing going on, but I do think that the fact that, technology and globalization and other factors have led to the growth of superstar firms, even if they've got there on the merits through, you know, competing, through producing better products or services, there is the risk that they may abuse that power. So I think there is a very important role for trying to guard that these firms don't abuse their market power to the detriment of consumers.
For some superstar firms, particularly in the technology business, where people don't obviously pay for their services, it's quite difficult to use existing antitrust law, isn't it, to work out whether they are abusing their market position.
That's right. I mean, the traditional way that we think, say, from a merger, and a company's going to merge another firm, that, you know, we look at how big the firm being acquired is in terms of the market share. If you say there's two firms, both of whom had 40% of the market, they're going to merge with 80%, you know, that merger would generally be blocked. That new firm is likely to be too powerful and put up prices. But typically what happens in high tech is that you have these very large firms, and they often take over firms which are very small, new startups. The new startups haven't got a lot of revenue, they haven't got a lot of market share. So those things will typically be, you know, passed through as an acquisition or a merger. It's possible that many of these firms being taken over may become the future competitors if they were allowed to develop by themselves. If what's happening is that many of the kind of big high-tech incumbents are buying up the future competition, you won't get the kind of dynamic type of innovation that you would have got if these firms had been allowed to develop by themselves. For example, when Facebook bought Instagram or WhatsApp, at that point, neither WhatsApp nor Instagram were particularly large firms, but they potentially could have been alternative social media platforms, which could have been real competitors for Facebook. So some people argue that the reason that Facebook bought them up was to kind of prevent them becoming a big, you know, threat in the future. And that's worrying from an antitrust point of view, because, you know, what you want is lots of vibrant competition to encourage innovation. And, you know, this potentially could chill innovation in the future.
From the point of view of the individual startups, one of their potential exits is to be bought by one of the dominant companies in the business. And you can't close that off to them, or else you'll close off the routes for innovation as well.
Well, it's definitely the case that, you know, you talk to the venture capitalists in Silicon Valley and other places, or in, you know, Cambridge, Massachusetts, or in MIT, what they talk about is an exit strategy. You know, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, the exit strategy was an IPO, an initial public offering to get on the stock market. And that was the exit, that when you could, you know, start getting your money back in a serious way. But now the exit strategy is to be bought up by somebody else. This is a way of getting your money back. But from the point of view maybe of competition or the consumer, then it's a little bit more worrying, because if the company who gobbles you up is not going to be as good as the startup is to develop its new ideas, then that is going to be a potential problem for future innovations. So I think, you know, there is definitely issues to be thought about there. In my view, if you made it a bit harder for some of the very large companies to take over some of the small future competitors, would this kill off innovation? I kind of doubted it. You know, it didn't kill it off 10 or 15 years ago. You know, we're not talking about blocking any kind of mergers. We're just trying to think a little bit more about shifting the burden of proof towards saying, you know, there's going to be much less of a risk that when I take over this up-and-coming startup, I'm not going to do something to reduce its future innovative disruptive position. There's some work in pharmaceuticals which has shown that many of the big pharma companies have taken over some of the smaller biotech companies, and when they take them over, they actually close down some of their drug development, because the drugs which they're going to develop are going to threaten some of the drugs that the big pharma companies are already producing. It's an example really where the innovation itself is less, the consumers are worse off, the patients are worse off because they're not going to get access to some of the new drugs which might have been developed. Thinking about the rules of competition and how we think about mergers in terms of not just current competition but future competition is something that we really need to kind of think about as a society.
There are many people, especially in the venture capital community, that would argue that we shouldn't be worrying about how well the very best firms are doing, but instead should be wondering whether the firms that aren't as good, why aren't they improving quickly enough, or why aren't they going out of business quicker? Is that a reasonable argument?
That is a major concern. I mean, one of the ways in which we get faster productivity growth is through creative disruption, through the less productive firms exiting and the more productive firms growing. We have seen some evidence over the last decade or two in the US that the rate of dynamism is actually declining in many aspects. So relating to what we've just been talking about startups, if you look at the fraction of workers in firms under the 5 years old, young firms, that fraction has declined. In that dimension, there does seem to be less, you know, dynamism. There's a slower reallocation of jobs between different firms. So I think that is something which we need to be worried about. Some people have linked that to the growth of superstar firms. So why haven't you got so many workers working in young firms? Well, those startups get taken over by the elder firms when they start looking successful. Maybe one of the reasons that laggards are struggling to catch up with leaders is that superstar firms are becoming too entrenched. It's harder to catch up using their technologies and imitating what they're doing, and that's actually being the cause of this increase of the productivity spread. So I think we need to think about ways in which our economy could become more flexible and enable more reallocation between the less and more productive firms.
Do we have to rewrite our antitrust laws now that competition's not so much in the market but for the market?
There's always been part of antitrust which is meant to be taking that seriously. So, you know, in most competition law, you're meant to look at industries, and if you know, dominant companies are doing things to reducing future competition by trying to drive out other firms, then that's something which, you know, should be stopped. So a classic example of this would be Microsoft. Microsoft got to a very strong position on the operating system by producing better products and competing on the merits. But there came a point in the late 1990s, early 2000s, when they started doing things to drive out startups like Netscape, to making it harder to work with the operating system if you were Linux, which were anti-competitive. And, you know, European Commission had a big case against them and prosecuted them successfully over that. And I think that's a good example of where, you know, Microsoft as a superstar firm got there for legitimate reasons, but eventually it was found out to be using its power in a way which was harming consumers. So I think more of that needs to be done. So there is existing competition law which enables competition forces to do something about that, but they're often very reluctant to do it. You know, there's good reasons. You shouldn't be, you know, doing this too often to too many firms. But I think now that we're in this era of mega firms, of superstar firms, we have to dust off those old rules and actually start thinking, yes, competition really is about future competition innovation and not just about current portfolio of market shares that companies have.
On topics like this, John, one question we like to ask is, if we could make you omnipotent policymaker for the day, is there anything that you would do, and what would that be?
Or in this particular area? But in this particular area, I think, you know, in my view is that we need to think a bit about shifting the burden of proof more towards companies when the very large companies, superstar firms, are taking over other companies, to actually say, you know, why we think this takeover is going to be one which is going to be good for future competition. At the moment, the burden of proof is on the government to show that this will definitely cause real harm in the future. And of course, it's really hard to do it. I think this obviously still should be an important hurdle to cross, but I think we need to shift that burden a bit more onto the companies and a bit away from the government. So that would be my change in this area.
And how likely is it that what you want will come true?
I'm optimistic. I actually think that there is a lot of popular resentment against the power of these very large companies. I think some of that is unfair. But I think, rightly or wrongly, people are getting pretty fed up and pretty worried with the power of these companies. So I think there is a kind of push to do something on these very large firms, especially the tech firms. So I think maybe the moment is right to use that kind of popular feeling combined with some serious thinking about how to change the antitrust rules.
John Van Rienen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You can Google John's Jackson Hole paper, but it draws on a lot of previous research from John and his co-authors, that's fair to say, isn't it?
That is fair to say.
Some of which you can find on the CEPR website. There are two discussion papers that you might want to take a look at, and they are number 12041, which is The Fall of the Labour Share and the Rise of Superstar Firms, and 11187, that's Management Practices, Workforce Selection and Productivity.
This has been your weekly Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. Subscribe to Vox Talks on your favourite podcast platform or catch up with our back catalogue at www.voxeu.org/vox-talks.